Our connection this hour is made in inmate populations in jails across the country. The Marshall Project has been tracking what's been going on during the pandemic in incarcerated populations. And when you look at a state-by-state look at coronavirus in prisons, the Marshall Project tracks 276,000 cases and now more than 1,700 deaths in prisons from COVID-19. The Marshall Project concerned about making sure that each population is properly protected. It is not easy, as we know in nursing homes, as we know in business offices. I mean, anywhere you've got an indoor population, introducing COVID at all becomes a big, big challenge. And so when you look at what's been going on throughout the year, Ohio had one of the first outbreaks in its jail populations. Those have since improved, but we've seen it just about everywhere, in sometimes in large numbers, sometimes smaller. And now we are seeing it in Monroe County. In fact, the sheriff's office has created a Monroe County Jail inmate COVID-19 dashboard. And looking at those numbers today, there are 183 COVID-positive inmates. 13 of the 183 are symptomatic. 266 inmates are in proactive quarantine. And there have been hundreds of tests. In fact, a plan to test the whole population. What the sheriff says is an aggressive plan to make sure they've got the full picture of information. It is a big challenge. And we want to talk about what's happening this hour, because it's a snapshot here, and every county is a little bit different, but it's been an issue and a challenge across the country. Let me bring in a couple of guests now. Captain James McGowan joins us, representing not only the sheriff's office, but the Monroe County Jail. And Captain McGowan, thank you for making time for us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us on.
Julie Sianca is here, a special assistant public defender for the Monroe County Public Defender's Office. Julie, welcome back to the program to you.
Thank you very much, Evan. I'm glad to be here.
I'll start with Captain McGowan. I'm just looking at the dashboard here. And if you could, beyond the numbers, kind of give me a sense for the full picture of what is happening. And we'll talk about how challenging this has been and what the steps are. But what's the current state of things with COVID in the jail, Captain?
So, as you know, back around Thanksgiving, we experienced our first set of positives that went beyond just one person here or one person there, and experienced what we consider to be an outbreak. And rather than just leave it at that, we decided it would be prudent to test every single person that not only lives in this jail, but also works in the jail. And we knew at that time what we were getting into. And what we are getting into, obviously, is if you went out in Monroe County and tested 750,000 residents of the county, easily a third or more of those would test positive. As you know, with this disease, multiple people have no symptoms. Unfortunately, when you give a test for the first time, you may just be testing positive, showing that you historically had the disease sometime in the last 12 weeks or possibly even longer. You may not even be transmitting the virus at that time. So we knew we were going to actually get some gigantic numbers here, but we needed a starting point. And the reason we chose to do that was the safety and security of our inmate population and our staff here is our number one priority. So even if it meant looking bad, even if it meant gigantic numbers, we had to put the inmate population and the staff that work in this building first. So we decided to go ahead and test those numbers. And we finally got through the first wave. The numbers are they're high. We don't like them. But we're doing it again. We're testing a second wave right now. And we're doing this again to make sure that we have a solid starting point. We know who's positive, where they should be, who's not positive, where they should be, and who's in waiting on a test result, where they should be. The positive news out of all this is that what do we have here today? 729 inmates in our custody, and out of literally right now we have an updated number, 254 positive inmates, and that's our final number here when we're done with all the tests. Only 14 have any symptoms, and none of which require hospitalization or anything over and above concern for our medical vendor.
So I want to get back to those numbers in just a second, Captain, but I want to make sure the audience understands something, because I missed something when I was recapping what the governor said. When we talk about the challenge of containing COVID in indoor settings, as I mentioned, whether it's jails, businesses, or nursing homes, for example, it is a big challenge. And there have been a lot of questions, for example, on nursing homes. One bit of news, just to make sure I squeeze this in here. We're in phase one of vaccination, and phase one includes nursing homes, but that hasn't started yet. And a lot of people have asked, well, when does that start? We see healthcare workers getting their first vaccination doses this week. The governor did address that, so let me make sure people understand. CVS and Walgreens is going to be helping with a vaccine program in New York State. They will be going into the nursing homes. So the governor said today there are 618 nursing homes in New York in this program that CVS and Walgreens are participating. They will start that plan Monday. And they figure it'll take 2 weeks to administer the first round of vaccination doses. So a two-week plan starting on Monday in the nursing homes. And the expectation is that anyone in a nursing home population, whether you work at a nursing home or you live there, should be fully vaccinated with the second dose by the end of January. So there is your news for the day on nursing homes. Vaccinations start on Monday with CVS and Walgreens helping go in. It may be, by the way, that in 2021, when the general population gets called or later phases get called, we are going to actual CVS and Walgreens locations ourselves to get shots. But for now, CVS and Walgreens is sending workers in to the nursing homes to administer the first round, and that starts on Monday. It's been a big problem because when a nursing home, for example, has had a COVID outbreak, you often don't know where it comes from. But when you've got staff, just as you do in the jail, that work in a setting, but obviously move about the community, they might be going to grocery stores or other places, you know, someone can bring in COVID. And when it starts to move, boy, you see how fast it can move. Captain McGowan, I want to make sure I got these numbers now. 729 inmates in the Monroe County Jail. Is that right? The total number of inmates, 729?
That was accurate as of this morning, correct, Evan.
And 254 are COVID positive. Is that correct?
That's correct. At the end of our mass testing here, we tested every single person in the jail, and that's where we landed. 254 are currently positive.
So more than a third have COVID, but 14 out of the 254 are symptomatic. Is that right?
Correct. So 34.8% to be exact, and only 14 symptomatic inmates. That's also correct.
Are you treating symptomatic inmates different in terms of quarantine and, you know, where they're staying versus the 240 who are positive without symptoms?
So symptomatic always get a higher level of medical care here, depending on the specific symptom. All others who are not symptomatic, which is the majority, are housed together, and all of them still receive medical care, even though there's no symptoms at all, mostly which is comprised of, you know, vitamins and some things of that nature that our medical vendor is just doing to be on the safe side. Most people have no idea here they even have it. They wonder why we're making such a big deal out of it, but again, we're doing it for their safety and to make sure. But to answer your question again, the person with the symptoms, is they're checked multiple times a day by our medical staff. We have 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week coverage here, both medical and mental health staff, in case that's also necessary, just to make sure that they're all right. And fortunately, we have nobody in the hospital right now due to COVID.
Okay. Captain McGowan, we do know, we have got a large enough picture of data now to know that COVID is behaving, this coronavirus is behaving like a lot of other viruses behave. There is a seasonal component. It's harder to contain in colder weather. People are indoors more. The virus doesn't always handle heat, light, and humidity very well, but we got a lot less of that in the fall and winter months. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing much larger numbers community-wide. Do you have a sense for when and how COVID got into the jail? I mean, is there any way to know that in your mind?
We wish there was. It's the same problem the community experiences. If we knew, you know, exactly where something was coming in, we could shut it down and stop it, you know, just like the nursing homes, just like any other, you know, business or place like that. And that's the real trick here, is that you have a disease that does not manifest itself like most other diseases do. If you get the regular flu, you know you've got the flu because you're sick, and you go home and you feel crappy. With this disease, a third of people literally have no idea they have this. And some of those people have been known to shed the virus and transmit it. And that's the challenge for us. Now, to make sure that we address that, two things. We have masking policies here that are beyond anything we've seen anywhere. Everyone that works inside here and has any contact with an inmate is required to wear an N95 mask at all times. All inmates are required to wear a surgical mask anytime they're outside their cell. Social distancing is mandated. The inmates are not allowed to congregate in a gym together. They're not allowed to eat together at tables. They eat in their own cells. We've stopped the inmate population from even preparing meals. We now do that ourselves. Everything is decontaminated multiple times. We've assigned staff dedicated to nothing else but cleaning crews. So all they do is all day long go to the facility and clean. We're in the process right now of looking at doing something that you mentioned there, just looking at the air and testing it. You know, you never can take too many steps here to make sure that everyone is safe. You mentioned humidity. That's a primary issue. Is in the fall when there's less humidity in the air and somebody coughs or sneezes, those particles can travel further. In the summer months, they don't travel as far. And it's not necessarily that you're indoors, it's that the humidity levels are down. And we see this everywhere in schools. And, you know, even with all the steps we took, we knew that sooner or later this was going to come in here. And we are dealing with that now. And so we took the further step. We're starting working on this next week. Is we're going to test every single staff member that comes into this jail every single week. So again, instead of waiting for the fever to pop or waiting for the person to feel ill, we're going to try and be proactive and catch that on the front end. Obviously, there are staffing concerns with that, and we're prepared to address those. We've got many plans in place for that. But we're going to have the same exact issue with our jail staff that we have with the inmates, possibly having a third of them show up positive.
Yeah. What is the plan for inmate testing going forward? How often do you think you can test the whole population?
So that's a great question. We have a plan in place. We use a model here. We've been able to look at people that have successfully come out of this in other prisons. PrimeCare is our medical vendor. They have 80-some sites up and down the East Coast, and they have experienced this before with a COVID outbreak and how to come out of it successfully. So what we do is we tested every single person in the jail. Now we're going back and doing it again. Just yesterday and today, we finished up giving every single person that tested negative a second COVID test because, as you know, if you have just been exposed to the virus, you may not test positive for it that day or even 3 or 4 days after. So we're going to wait. We waited already. Now we're on our second phase. We're testing every single person again. And once those results are all back, we'll have an answer, and we think we'll know where we sit with the inmate population. And by that point, we'll have three types of units. We'll have a negative unit where we know every single inmate is negative. We'll have a presumptive positive unit where at some point someone tested positive in that unit, so we assume everyone's exposed. And then we have a known positive unit where the only people living in there are people that have tested positive. So by dividing the population into three distinct segments like that and taking further steps too, taking a deputy that has tested positive in the past and having them work in a known positive unit, we can start to shut down some of the things that are unknown to us. So it's a safer model, and it's proven successful in other prisons and jails, so we're following that model at this time. But to answer your other question too, anyone through the door will be testing. We'll have a quarantine, as we always have since day one back in March. We quarantine everyone through the door for 14 days. What we didn't used to do was test everyone. So now we'll start testing all of them probably on day 3 or 4, and then once again prior to them leaving the quarantine area and going to general population.
All right, before I turn to Julie for some thoughts on this, I know, Captain, everyone sort of responds to adversity differently, but I am curious to know generally, is there nervousness inside the jail? I mean, what is the mentality like when you've got a third of the population infected with COVID?
So that's a good question. And if you look at the inmates, when we first started having to take things away like social visitation and segmenting the population and quarantining them, we expected much, much more pushback. What we found, of course, was they were very, very nervous about the situation to the point where they really appreciated everything we were doing to take care of them and look out for them. And that happened. You found the same thing with the testing. They're very much very happy, you know, that we're testing them and we're testing ourselves. In addition to that, to try and take off that edge, we added free phone calls. Usually an inmate will pay for a phone call. Now we have two free phone calls a week, and then we added a free 30-minute video conference on. We have the ability to do that so they can stay in touch with their loved ones, talk to them. There's no cost associated with that, just to try and have them a little more settled. It's the holiday season. We're very well aware of that. We have our mental health staff on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure that anyone that's experiencing any type of depression or anxiety has somebody to sit down and talk to them about that, because it's always our concern. And again, going back to the safety, security of the staff and the inmates, you know, that's number one. And the staff are feeling the same type of stress. You know, there's people here that thought they might have had Christmas Day off, and now they may not because we're starting testing right now. We realize we're not going to have as many staff available to us as we did. It's stressful, but our staff are great. They pull together every time, regardless of what we have going on here. The one team concept that the sheriff stands behind, it actually is actually walked every day. You can walk through here and you can see these ladies and gentlemen that are deputies in here living that. And I'm actually humbled by it. I'm sitting up here in an office trying to work through these problems here, and our line staff are down there actually inside with the N95s dealing with these problems every day, and they're doing a great job because they are also, in effect, social workers. These deputies are in there dealing with the inmate population, trying to alleviate any fears and concerns they have, react to any needs that they have, and at the same time watch out for their own mental health.
Let me turn to Julie Cianca, Special Assistant Public Defender for Monroe County in the Public Defender's Office. Julie, how do you see the state of things with COVID in the jail? What comes to mind first for you?
I want to second everything that I just heard. The deputies have been tremendous. The first thing that comes to mind as I'm listening is it does reiterate to me that, you know, the jail is not a medical facility. It's a legal facility, yet they're being called upon to behave and regulate themselves as if it's become a medical facility. And everybody has really risen to that challenge ever since this first became an issue. When COVID first, you know, created lockdown for us, I think we all had immediate concerns for the well-being of our clients. You know, they are inmates, they are also human beings, and the stress that was going to be impacting them by not being able to communicate, by their cases slowing down, not appearing in court, trials down to a standstill. And it was remarkable to me how calm clients were. You know, they were human beings. They understood the situation. It was unavoidable. And I give a lot of credit to the jail staff for participating in programs that helped us keep everything calm and keep people behaving safely and with as little stress as possible. So I am extremely grateful for all of the contributions that jail staff have made in keeping this process going early on. A lot of our visits were done over the phone. The jail was amazing in arranging those. Once we started actually being able to make in-person visits, again, the level of attentiveness that was being given to keeping areas clean. I'd be followed around with the deputy, you know, with a bottle of spray in their hand, you know, going in before me and coming in after me and cleaning up. So everybody really gave 150%. We were doing court appearances remotely, and deputies would be in the room, you know, with our clients while they were appearing remotely, and you could see that they were exerting, again, kind of a calming influence. So in terms of a team effort, I want to commend everybody at the jail for that, and I also want to commend the men and women who are in the jail for taking this as calmly as they have. The situation's a little bit different now because we do have so many positives in the jail. So we are now in my office trying to implement a program to see what we can do to get out certain individuals to reduce the stress level, not only on some designated inmates and their families, but also to try and create less pressure on the deputies to get some more people out of there so that they're not quite as overtaxed as they are. So overall, I would 100% agree that the jail has done a great job. I was there Wednesday doing interviews because we're doing a project and I needed to go in and interview, I think, about 15 inmates. And the jail executed this without flaw. I was able to see these clients quickly, safely. And while I was there, again, I saw the attention that's being paid to keep the place clean. I actually saw somebody walking around with like a Ghostbusters backpack on, spraying into the air itself some kind of decontaminant. So overall, I would say that the jail has truly risen to the occasion. It's really inexplicable what we've had to deal with COVID, and they've done a tremendous job.
Do you think there should be changes in policies at all? You know, beyond sanitation, testing, and care for people who've been infected, Julie, is there any policy change that you think ought to come with this rise in infections?
Well, as a defense attorney, obviously, I'm going to say there are certain people who don't need to be in custody. So really sharpening our focus on who truly needs to be incarcerated. People at Monroe County Jail, you might recall, for the most part, are people who haven't been convicted of any offenses. So going back and making sure that bail is only being set on the cases that most merit it under the bail statute, just not using the jail as a holding facility for purposes that are unrelated to legal ends, you know, really making sure that we are getting as much of the population out as is reasonably possible. And that's what we're focusing on here, is to try and designate those people and put together some motions. We're doing some habeas corpus writs now, where we're trying to get these matters in front of judges to see if we can convince judges that, you know, there are individuals in there that we don't truly believe don't need to be in there right now.
Can I ask for just obviously, I don't want you to be specific with a name or too identifying a piece of information, but what is a scenario that's an example that right now you could say to a judge, look, you know, this is an example of someone who probably shouldn't be in there given XYZ circumstances?
Sure. If we have somebody who's been convicted, for example, and is serving a sentence for a $10 petit larceny or an aggravated unlicensed charge, there may be some community support for the idea that that person still needs to be in custody because they need to serve their sentence. They have a debt to society. But we think that debts to society have a different meaning now with COVID, and the idea that remaining in custody and being exposed to the virus, and we know it's not possible to avoid. It was going to get into the jail. There was nothing. The jail was not indifferent to this risk. The risk was indifferent to the jail. So we know that that's going to happen. Ultimately, is it truly a balance of rights when one individual is serving, you know, a 30-day sentence for something minor and potentially could catch COVID and have a death sentence as a result, that there isn't a community interest in that? You know, winding up on a ventilator for driving without a license, there are certain consequences to incarceration that we could not have predicted back at the time the person was sentenced. So we're asking judges to look at those sentences again and, again, decide whether or not that's truly in the interest of community safety, that these people remain incarcerated versus their personal safety, that they are at high risk of COVID. Also designated individuals who have medical issues, the underlying medical issues that make them more vulnerable to COVID infection and complications from that. So that's what we're asking, to look at this a little differently, because the consequences of incarceration right now have increased.
Well, a couple more follow-ups for you before I turn back to Captain McGowan. Julie, you know, are you at the point where you think RPD needs to find a way to stop sending a lot fewer people to jail, for example? I mean, is it as simple as that, or is it much more complex than that?
I would argue that it's much more complex.
Okay.
There's several steps along the way between an arrest and somebody entering the Monroe County Jail. And there are many other parties involved, the district attorney's office, judges, my office, other defense attorneys. There's a lot of minds that come into the process before they are actually going in. And maybe those all of us need to think differently about who those people should be.
Okay. If there's kind of an appeal to judges to think about habeas and to think about, you know, who is going to be ending up in that jail and who is not, do you see a role for the sheriff in this? I don't know, you know, all the pieces that would have to move to start to get a little bit of policy change, Julie, but do you see a role for the sheriff in this?
I do. I think the sheriff and his staff are uniquely qualified to be able to make decisions about who they think should be in their jail. It's their house, and they have the ability to make those sorts of decisions and should have some discretion, I believe, and who should be there and who shouldn't. No, they have firsthand knowledge. They have face-to-face contact with the people in the jail, and it seems as though they would be well qualified in deciding whether or not some of these people would be eligible for some type of early release program, or if their health puts them at an increased risk that I'm sure the jail doesn't want to have to be on the line for that, and they should be able to have some say ultimately on who's staying in there.
Julie, before this program, I spoke to a number of people who've been working on these efforts, sometimes privately, and they have told me that they have been gratified that the sheriff is listening, that there have been meetings, there have been conversations. Not everybody agrees on, you know, the sort of the current state of policy, and I'm not talking testing and helping people with COVID. I'm talking about exactly what you just kind of talked about, which is early release or habeas, et cetera. But they feel like it right now, there is communication, that the sheriff is listening. Are you comfortable with that? Do you feel like that's happening?
Absolutely. Tremendous. As I said, I went in on Wednesday to do these interviews. I had 100% cooperation with the jail. Donated two deputies to accompany me around the jail. Again, keeping, I mean, I cannot even articulate the level that they were taking care of everything, every area I went into. And then once I left and it went off, it was a big project, and they are overworked right now. And to have me in there asking to meet with all of these inmates and take the time to do these interviews, and it went off without a hit. And then they arranged for me to have several more phone calls with inmates who are being held elsewhere. And that type of interaction and support is just, it was very heartening to me to know that we can work together. We may have different ideas on ultimately how this should end up, but that level of cooperation was really encouraging.
Hmm. Captain McGowan, how do you feel about the idea of maybe taking a fresh look at early release, for example? Does that make sense to you?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Julie for the perspective from inside the jail. Not a lot of people get to come in the jail and see that, and I want to thank her for that, because that always helps us. As far as early release, we are a little bit limited in that from our capacity of here. We just take someone that's committed to us, and the sheriff houses them. It's always based upon a judge's order. However, when a habeas is put forth and someone is requesting to be released, we are called over there and asked to, you know, give medical records and things like that. So that portion, you know, Julie's absolutely correct on that. We would have a perspective there from how well the person's doing in custody, both their mental health and their physical health. And if there are any concerns there, they would be explained to the judge from us on the incarcerated person's behalf. We always leave that to the judge, you know, to make that determination as to whether the person should be incarcerated or not. I also couldn't agree with her more that we have become a hospital and a mental health community in the jail. Those are some of the challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis, long before COVID even reared its head. And we find that every day we got to find another way to try and help somebody. And in addition to that, all the programming and the programs to try and help people once they reenter the community. Most people in the county jail do reenter the community. And that's an important consideration for everybody to remember. And that's the sheriff's focus here, too, is that most people aren't going to prison. Some people do, but most people are getting back out. And like Julie accurately stated, some people are in here for, you know, a very short time for a very low sentence. And some people, the reasons they're in here for that short time and that low sentence is because they have challenges out there that no one's helping support them meet. And the sheriff here, one of his primary functions is to try and help them address those challenges. Do you have an anger management issue? Do you have a housing issue? Do you have insurance issues? Do you have job skill issues? Do you have an addiction issue? And then we try and custom tailor a program for that specific person's need and get them back out there. Now, sometimes they're not here long enough for us to do very much, and sometimes they're not interested in our help. But those that are, there's absolutely a responsibility of everyone in the community, including the sheriff's office, to try and help those individuals get back on their feet and have them reenter the community in a much more prepared way to succeed.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about this, because when Todd Baxter was running for sheriff, he spoke on this program about the fact that it's not just running a jail, it's recognizing that people who are incarcerated mostly are going to end up back in society. And that there has to be an effort to understand, how did you end up here? Where do you go next? Do you feel cared for? Do you have needs that have not been met? Can we help you get there? Because as the sheriff told us on this program, they don't want people coming back to the jail. They want people to have productive, healthy, and successful lives. And part of that, I think, Captain, has been a history in this country of an incarcerated experience that can be dehumanizing for a number of reasons in a number of different settings. And I'm not being specific. I'm not, you know, casting aspersions on any particular jail. But in general, an experience that can be dehumanizing, it can make it very, very difficult for anyone to feel like they can reenter society. Recidivism is higher in populations that feel dehumanized or given up on. And the sheriff has talked a lot about wanting to have sort of the opposite standard, have people feel loved and cared for and invested in various ways to give them every shot here. If you had a situation during a pandemic where people who are incarcerated feel like nobody gives a damn about them, that they could get infected, that they could die, well, you shouldn't have been in prison in the first place or in jail in the first place, I think it would be a disaster. And I'm not sure that that isn't happening in certain settings. Are you confident that people who are incarcerated at the Monroe County Jail feel like, hey, we care about you, we are invested in you, we're going to work with you, and we also care about whether you get sick or not. We don't want that to happen. Are you confident that that tone and message is sent?
Well, Evan, there's no question that historically over the last several thousand years, the way of incarcerating people not only hasn't worked, but, you know, it's been mostly a punitive measure with very little thought to what's going to happen when the incarceration period is over. And the sheriff has accurately stated that hasn't worked. We all know that model doesn't work. We've looked at it all around, you know, even in the last, you know, 50 or 60 years, you know, in this country, it just doesn't work. The punitive model doesn't do anything to get anybody rehabilitated or back on their feet. And all these people are coming back out into our community and are going to live next to me or you or somebody else, and we want to have the tools to do that. The most important thing, as you mentioned, is the people in our jail here, do they have, A, the support that they need if they want it, and B, do they feel that they have, you know, help and the people actually care about them? And I can't say that every single person in the jail feels that way, because, of course, the answer would be no. I'm sure the people in here, not all of them do. But I think most people in here, whether it's the staff or the inmates, you know, most everybody in here gets along with everybody, and most everybody in here knows everybody, and most everybody in here, you know, the deputies in here have to be in here 8 hours a day every day for 20, 30 years, and the inmates are in here 24 hours a day. Most of them get along pretty well, and most of them find a way if they don't agree on everything, because they don't, you know, not anybody inmate wants to be, you know, where we tell them to go at the time we tell them to go there. But we pretty much usually can find a way to make it work without there being much drama or much of an incident. But the perception is everyone's reality. And if you were to go probably even here 20 or 30 years ago, I'm sure you would have a much different answer from all the inmates. And I think if you came in here today, and Julie can attest to this from a different perspective too, you know, what do the inmates think about the deputies in here? What do the inmates think about the treatment in here? Well, again, not every single inmate's happy because they're in jail. But I think most of them feel, for the most part, that we're looking out for their mental health, their physical health, their well-being, and their safety in here. And for the ones that want to raise their hand and get help, we're here to line up. I got over 100 programs ready to go. If you've got a need, we've got a program for it, and we can point you in the right direction and try and help you out. We have full-time rehab staff that, if not in here, they're working from home. We just set our phone system up right now so that an inmate from the housing area can actually call the office of the rehab person to minimize people moving around and transmission of stuff, so we can still have that positive contact between an incarcerated person and his counselor or his CASAC or anyone they need to speak to that way. So the question's absolutely valid, and I think most people in here have a positive and a fair view of what's going on, and I think a couple, I'm sure, don't.
Okay. Julie, just briefly, do you generally agree with that? And do you see the sheriff putting into action what he talked about when he first ran for this office, that it's not just about incarceration, it's about rehabilitation and thinking about people's futures?
Yes, and I see that in the level of teamwork that has been displayed during the COVID response, that when I'm on a court appearance by Skype or however we're doing it, and I'm able to watch the deputy's interaction with my client on the other end of the screen, because they're in a room by themselves and I'm in a room by myself, and I realize that they are having a relationship. You know, it's frustrating for me because that's supposed to be my role, you know, as my client's advocate. I'm the one who's supposed to be there in the room with them. But I realize that the deputy is the one that's there seeing them, listening to them, making sure that they're appearing in the, you know, in the camera appropriately, that they're being heard by the court. I was doing a hearing once when the deputy interrupted and said, "I'm sorry, Judge, we can't see, right? We can't see the witness. Can you move the camera?" That just, these may be just considered minor kindnesses, but those type of kindnesses build up because they let people know that even though they're in an unfortunate situation, that they are being treated with dignity and respect. And I see that over and over again. And I've seen everybody step up to the plate during these really, really difficult circumstances. Again, my dispute would be how many people really need to be there, but that's not the sheriff's problem. That, you know, that goes to other areas of the justice system. But overall, yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
All right. Well, 729 people incarcerated in the Monroe County Jail. And again, we learned from Captain McGowan this hour, the updated number is 254 positive with COVID. That's more than a third. Most of them are not symptomatic, but that's a lot of COVID cases in the jail. Julie, just sort of briefly, is there a number in your mind, realistically, if you say there's 729 people incarcerated, there should probably a third of them should never have been in there, or half? I mean, is it less? Is there a sort of a number in your mind that makes sense?
Until somebody's been convicted, they're presumed innocent. And again, my perspective on that is going to be that only individuals who have been really seriously vetted to determine whether or not they should be in custody pre-conviction, that number should be less than what it is just in general. But once we start looking at the risk that COVID presents, we should start looking then at, okay, who's at risk out of the number of people who should actually even be there, you know, who qualify under the bail statute, under the strictest interpretation, mm-hmm. What percentage of those people are at high risk? And now we should make some type of accommodation for that. And then you start factoring in the nature of the charge, things like that. I feel that there should not be as many people in the jail being held right now.
All right, Captain McGowan. Captain McGowan, our last 30 seconds, got to keep it tight. Will there be a move to decarcerate, you know, at any level given infections, or is it sort of proceed as you've been doing?
So we don't have the ability to do that. That's something that's, you know, discussed at a judge's level, and the judge makes that decision, and we basically follow what the court's directions
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I got you. You're managing the jail. A lot of it's going to be in judges' hands. I take that point. And Captain McGowan, I know there is a Monroe County Jail inmate COVID-19 dashboard. It is very easy to access and see and read, and I know people appreciate that. As Julie has said, I know it's not an easy job during this pandemic, but I appreciate you making time for the program and keeping us updated. We wish you and certainly the inmates the best of luck, and let's stay in touch. Thank you, Captain.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Stay safe and stay healthy. You too, Julie.
And that's Captain James McGowan from the Monroe County Jail, and Julie Sianca, Special Assistant Public Defender from the Monroe County Public Defender's Office. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much, Evan.
You got it. A complicated problem, but important. We'll be following that, and more connections coming up.